T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Chuck and Winkler, Milwaukee's longest running sports talk morning show. In one corner, a guy who has covered the Packers for 30 plus years. In the other, a Green Bay owner. Chuck and Winkler in the morning on The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. More NCAA tournament today. Badgers 3:30. Oregon TBS. Marquette losing yesterday. We'll talk about that. Some of the other games. Everyone's bracket should be okay unless you took Seton Hall to beat Kentucky like a loser. Like me. Oops. I had a feeling. Oh well. I won't get the 1 in 9 quintillion odds of a perfect bracket. Maybe next year. Ryan Horvath at the adult table for Frames. He'll be back on Monday. You'll hear a little bit of Chuck today. 9:30. We had the chance to talk to Marcus Johnson, and with his jersey being retired this weekend, to go down memory lane with him is always fun. And talk about, you know, where it went wrong. I mean, the redemption story is because it went wrong between him and the Bucks. So we'll talk about that and what he thinks of this current team as well. That's coming up 9:30. Marquette losing yesterday. Jay tweets in, guys, stop with the Wojo hot seat talk. Just fire him now.
I like it. Jay, taking no crap. I got asked a question on Twitter yesterday that I thought was pretty interesting, and I wanted to bring it up to you via text, and I completely forgot. So we were just talking about Eric Bledsoe, right? He was with Bill Michaels last night.
Bledsoe, because I said so.
So they locked up Bledsoe. Last year, we all wanted Bledsoe gone. This year, we all love him. The assist-to-turnover ratio, much better, although as of late, getting a little careless with the basketball, but still love Eric Bledsoe. But yesterday, somebody asked me on Twitter, would you trade Eric Bledsoe, Malcolm Brogdon, and Chris Middleton? Not that you have to trade them, but would you get rid of the three if you could bring in Ja Morant and pair him with Giannis for the next 10 to 15 years? Would you do that after watching this kid play one time like most people did yesterday?
Who am I trading? Bledsoe, Brogdon, and Middleton?
Let's take out Middleton. Like, that's a little bit ridiculous. I said absolutely.
Well, I'm going to say no.
Right. I was thinking,
would you do it for Zion?
I would probably do it for both. I would. I want something back in return. Like, I'm not taking one player for three. I mean, it's not going to happen. In you know, if anything, Middleton would just walk, or they're both coming back, Middleton and Brogdon, I would assume. But if you could have Zion or Ja Morant for the next 10 years, would you take that over
Bledsoe? Let's go Bledsoe and Brogdon. For 10 years, dude. 10 years is 10 years makes me want to do it for 10 years. Well, how old is he? 20? 21?
Yeah, he's only a 21-year-old kid. Okay, so let's do it like this then. Let's take Brogdon out of the equation. And let's go Middleton and Bledsoe. Would you do it? Would you rather have Bledsoe and Middleton, keep Brogdon, and would you have Ja Morant, can't even say his name, Jesus, is your point guard of the future? Or are you sticking with Bledsoe? Because you know what you have with Bledsoe, whereas this kid, you just saw a flash of what could be the best point guard.
Take him, yeah.
Yeah. Like, everybody that was tweeting, all the college basketball analysts yesterday were like, I see a lot of Russell Westbrook in him. So that's the only knock, though, is as exciting as he is and as good as he is, he does turn the ball over a lot. And
seven I feel like, yesterday, but he had a triple-double.
Right. So, the 16 assists to the 7 turnovers. I guess that's a ratio you'll take. But I feel like they just cleaned up Bledsoe and his assist-to-turnover ratio and him taking care of the basketball. So I don't know if you want to go through all that again. I just thought it was an interesting question. And I feel like we do this every year in the tournament. Like, people fall in love with one player. They see him play one time.
Yeah, then the Bucks draft him.
Dante DiVincenzo?
And DJ Wilson.
Dude, Dante DiVincenzo earned himself so much money last March.
The joke is that John Horst only watches college basketball in March. and just picks the best guy that had the best tournament.
Yeah. And so that was the other thing is like,
and it works out.
What would you trade to get up in the top three to get this kid? I saw that one on Twitter too. And I was like, I mean, I don't know anything but Giannis. That's what I said. For him or Zion. And now a lot of people, like even some people that I respect, questioning like, okay, you saw it now. Would you go with Ja Morant over Zion? Who has the higher ceiling? And I still say Zion does. But we've never really seen anybody like Zion before. Like, his body build, like, the way he's shaped, he kind of reminds me of, like, a bigger, stronger Julius Randle. But then you see how athletic he is, and you watch him in the open floor with those tomahawk jams, and you see how high he could get up, and you're like, yeah, I've never seen anybody like that. He's definitely the number one pick. But then when you saw from Morant yesterday, man.
Do you think it will depend on the team? I mean, I know. There is a lot of Morant or Zion talk. I thought it was pretty cemented that it should be Zion.
Like, I was laughing when Wolfel came on a couple weeks ago, and he actually said it. He was
yeah,
like,
me too.
And I was like, come on, Gary, get out.
Gary and I have the same final, Virginia over Duke.
You guys have been getting a little bit closer, I've noticed. You should see if he wants to watch the games with you today.
Wolfel and I, we're going to go mini golf at Mulligan's someday down in Racine.
Pick up some Perkins, get a Big Bart's breakfast, which I know is expired, but it'll be back, I'm assuming.
Well, you can get out there and get the $9.99 burger combo.
See, now people are getting crazy. Here's one. Would you trade Ethan Happ for both Hauser brothers? Let's just say they all have the same years of eligibility left.
I would.
Me too.
So, I mean, if the Suns get the number one pick, they've got Ayton. You still draft Zion, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. That's what's beautiful about today's league. There's no positions, so you can just right. figure it out. You know what I'm saying?
The Knicks?
The Knicks want Zion really bad. In fact, I am really rooting against the Knicks. I hate this idea that New York basketball is like the end-all, be-all.
Rucker Park, son.
Rucker Park, Madison Square Garden, the lights, the big lights. I'm like, the Big East sucks. Tournament always sucks. I care about the ACC, the Big Ten. Tell me that there's no competition. Villanova wins the damn thing every year.
Yeah, you know? They backtracked into it this year, too.
They have the best head coach. Villanova, Jay Wright's the best head coach in college basketball. For some reason, we just don't acknowledge that. Everybody talks about Tom Izzo and Krzyzewski. Like, look what that guy's doing. Like, it's just amazing that every single year. This year, Villanova should have been a middle-of-the-pack team. I mean, they have talent, and they still have a great recruiting class, but you lost Jalen Brunson, the best player in the Big East. You lost DiVincenzo. I mean, you lost your three best players, and still, I had them on high upset bid and bet pretty heavily against them yesterday, and all they do is win and take care of business. It's insane how important coaching is in college basketball.
What upsets do you like today? Why is everyone on UC Irvine? Is Kansas State bad, or is UC Irvine that good?
No, Kansas State's really good. They're kind of a boring team to watch, too. You'll be really bored if you watch that game. In fact, I took the over. You want to know how bored you'll be? If you watch that game, I got the over at 118 today.
Oh,
so
boy.
If I get like a 62-60 game, I hit the over. But yeah, that's Kansas State's style of
Badgers
basketball.
Over under is 116.
Yeah, I'm on that under, actually. I'm on the Badgers under. Badgers and Virginia, I just take every under. Kansas State, though, I mean, they're 25-8 this season. They're not the number four seed they're a good team, but they're kind of slow pace and really good defensively. They'll bore you to death, whereas UC Irvine, they like to score, but they're also pretty good defensively, and they're 30-5, so they're one of the top like mid-major. They're the hot team right now.
I'm jacked for the Northern Kentucky game. I'm so excited because Chuck is so high on how much they suck.
Yeah. So what Freems does, he comes in here.
I'm putting money on Northern Kentucky, Freems.
Freems comes in every day, and he has a lock, right? And he watches a lot of mid-major hoops.
Loves mid-majors.
Like, he loves these smaller schools. He'll be like, oh, Horford, did you see Green Bay yesterday? And I'll be like, no, it ain't football season. I'll be like, no, you know, the Rattlers or whatever their name is. No, I didn't, man. I didn't watch the Bullfrogs yesterday. But he always has a lock, okay? So he comes in here the other day, and he's like, Horvey, you got to hammer Toledo. And I'm thinking in my head, right, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, they're not even in the tournament, Frames. What are you talking about? And he's like, no, the NIT. He's like, that should have been an NCAA tournament team. And I'm like, no, you know, and I see, and they're like 7-point dogs Toledo is, and I haven't watched Toledo basketball in probably like, you know, 15 years. So I'm thinking all day, and I'm like, keep looking. I'm like, man, they're dogs, and, you know, maybe they should be in the tournament. Frames got in my head, so I throw a couple bucks on Toledo. Don't watch the game because I'm not going to watch the NIT tournament. Flip it on. Second half, they're down about 20. And so now Frames hates Northern Kentucky. I think I even have him quoted as saying the worst college basketball team all time. And everybody I look like, all these gambling experts are all saying take Northern Kentucky plus the 13 against Texas Tech.
Well, I'm going to ride the money line and see what happens.
I'm going to go with Frames and bet against them and just hope for the best.
It's Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins. You may be seeing more people bet against the Brewers, especially with the news out of their bullpen. Corey Knebel going to be down for a while. What that means for the bullpen and who you want to be closing games if there's no Jeffress, if there's no Knebel. Do you have Josh Hader as your closer, or is that a big mistake? We'll tell you what we think, and we'll hear from you guys via Twitter at 105.7 FM The Fan, as well as the phone lines. You can still call us the old-fashioned way, 414-799-1250, and then you can tell all your friends you were on Chuck and Winkler today, and you can impress them very much. $9.99 Perkins deals, been telling you about that, the $9.99 burger combos, where you get burgers, fries, and a slice of pie. You get that for $10. $9.99 burger combos available right now. You can throw in the onion rings there for a dollar more if you'd like. The burger, these are thick, juicy, stacked high with the toppings, whether it's the SoCal burger, the classic cheeseburger, or even the breakfast burger. Throw a patty down, get some hash browns on there, some bacon, the cheddar cheese, a fried egg, good stuff at Perkins. Available, again, with the fries and then with a slice of pie. Offer just $9.99. Tomorrow you can get that and then have a free meal for your kid. Kids eat free after 4 o'clock. When you get a meal, kids get a free kids meal. That's at Perkins every Tuesdays and Saturdays all throughout the Milwaukee area. No Corey Knebel? We'll tell you the details on what happened to him next on The Fan.
Yeah, it came up after we talked Monday morning. No, he had a quick inning. It was a 10-pitch inning. His velocity was down a little bit in that game, I think it was 11, maybe it was 12 pitches. It was a very fast inning, so it wasn't, even he threw his curveballs, and his velocity was a little down in that game.
Craig Counsell telling us about when they noticed something might be wrong with Corey Knebel. Said yesterday they were going to go have him see the doctor. He did, and it's a UCL injury. They said they don't think it's season-ending. So the good news is, all right, he's not going to be out for the season. And then you think about it for a split second, and you think, wait a minute. So how long is he going to be out? A damaged UCL, according to David Stearns. We're still determining the extent and whether to officially call it fraying tear, etc. But we know it's damaged to some extent. That's from our Adam McKelvey, who will talk to us on Monday around this time, 9 o'clock, about what the Brewers are to do. Jeremy Jeffress is going to be out for a little bit. Although it sounds like he threw a bullpen yesterday and there was no issue. So they're going to need him back. And then he would be the closer, you would think.
Yeah, I would assume.
I would keep Josh Hader out of that situation. Keep Hader out of the closer spot, because the reason they like using him where they do is they can pick his matchup. Mm-hmm. You're not just having to throw to the 7-8-9 guy because they happen to come up at a certain time in the game. They like Hader in the big spots. They like him against the team's best hitters, so that's when you want to use him. So I would stay consistent with that. The problem is, though, if Jeffress doesn't come back soon, and if he starts on the injured list, that's, you know, the first couple of weeks. And so, but thank you, by the way. I said injured list and not the DL. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm gonna struggle with that all year long. I already
know. It sounds wrong. It just doesn't sound
dirty.
Right.
You're right.
It just doesn't sound correct.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who you're gonna throw as the closer in the time being. If it's Matt Albers, Jacob Barnes, Junior Guerra. Chase Anderson is now in the bullpen.
I think the good thing about...
Do they give him a big spot right away?
Right. I think the good thing about the first couple weeks of the season are you could kind of go closer by committee and just work different guys. You could kind of pick your matchups. I mean, you don't want to do that, like I said, once you get towards the end of the season and you're in a pennant race. But right now, you could kind of mix and match. And I feel like a lot of teams... What's good is a lot of teams are going to be doing the same thing. Like, especially if you look in the division where the Cardinals, they have their bullpen pretty much set right now. But you look at the Cubs, man, and they threw all that money to Brandon Morrow. he's not going to be ready for the season. And they paid him all that money, so they don't even have their closer situation. I was just listening to some sports talk radio out there, and they're talking about Pedro Strop and this and that. They don't even know who their closer is. This is a situation that a couple different teams find themselves in. Not a good situation, especially when you're built like the Brewers are and the bullpen is your strength, but you can toy around and mess with some things here the first couple months of weeks of the season. And then hopefully you get Jeffers back. I want to know how serious that is.
You have a situation, though, where if you have a need for a reliever...
There's one out there.
There is a reliever out there in Craig Kimbrell, who has been waiting for what we assume is a multi-year deal. 5-6 years, which he hasn't gotten to this point. I don't think anyone's going to shell out 6 years on a closer or a reliever. Would you, I mean, the Hader's under contract for a few more years. Mm-hmm. Would you, if you just had him today, would you give him a 6-year deal? Hader, he might.
Hader, I would give a 6-year deal to. I'm with you on Kimbrell. I will not.
What is he, 30?
He's 30 years old. And just look at the usage, though. Over 330 career saves. Like, he gets used a lot. And what scares me about that is just, okay, so like, when the Cubs paid Yu Darvish all that money last year, everybody had brought up, I don't know why they paid him that money, because of the World Series. Like, he failed to make it to the third inning in the World Series, and he wasn't throwing strikes. That was the problem. He was tipping his pitches, and that's the same thing with Craig in the World Series, man, is he was walking everybody. He was struggling to throw strikes, and then it came out that he was tipping his pitches. So I don't know if that's maybe the concern, is if he wants the years. Like you said, he's 30 years old, the usage with him. I don't know that I want to give him the years, but if he could do something for 2 years, I think that that's definitely something you do. And I hate to be like Mr. Cliche, like bringing in the guy that's seen it all and won in the postseason, but you do want that. You want to hand that guy the ball.
Yeah, like Paul Gasol.
Well, no, Paul, yeah, but Paul Gasol is old as hell. I think that you're getting more with a 30-year-old than a 52-year-old ran down Paul Gasol, who's played how many minutes in the NBA in playoff series is, and, you know, he's probably played 9 full seasons just in the playoffs with the Lakers and everywhere else he's been. But I do that deal if you could do it to 2 to 3 years, but I'm with you. I'm not giving him 6 to 7 years because, like you said, I mean, you got JJ, you got your own guys, and you're built in the bullpen. You're going to have to give these guys money. So,
yeah, I don't think anyone would bat an eye if you gave him a 1-year deal. I mean, we all want a 1-year deal. Pay him $20 million. Who cares? We all want a 1-year deal. You pay him $20 million, that doesn't mean beer prices are going to go up, okay? Pay him $20 million, get him in here. We all want it. But is he going to take a 1-year deal? Well, you might say, well, where's he going to work otherwise? And he could get down to that choice. Or he could just stay waiting for a multi-year deal, wait until a team has these kind of injuries, and then use that as leverage. I mean, Kimbrel's got some leverage here, at least with the Brewers. They need a reliever. Adam McKelvey tweeting this yesterday as well. They love using Josh Hader in his current role, the flexible multi-inning role. But with Jefferson Knebel down, it could force an altered strategy. Again, we'll talk to Adam Monday at 9. Other options for the ninth right now begin with Albers, Barnes, and Guerra. Of those three, I would give it to Guerra. I thought Guerra performed very well as a reliever last year. I've got more I would say I have more confidence in him getting 3 outs than I do Barnes or Albers. Now, if Albers can pitch like he did before the injury last year,
yeah,
maybe you know take that for a spin. Barnes didn't pitch as bad as we all think he did, but he still gave up enough big runs in big spots that I think that would be the last of the three that I use. McKelvey also goes on to note that Stearns has added a reliever at the end of camp 3 straight years, so maybe they do that. Josh Fields is a guy that they recently picked up, but he's still got to go through weeks of work, so don't expect him anytime soon. But, I mean, if Craig Kimbrell, Stearns may be picking up, like, relievers, but there's a difference between Blaine Boyer and Craig Kimbrell. I mean, now this is where that Bobby Wall injury hurts them, too, the guy they traded for in the Broxton deal. Maybe they could have gone with him. You guys can chime in on Twitter, at 105.7 FM, The Fan, 414-799-1250 as we kick around what the Brewers might do in that ninth inning. I would stay away from Hader for as long as I can, and I would give Guerra the first crack.
And it gives Guerra kind of a role heading into the season too. You know, like making that adjustment already to the bullpen, and then you're handing them the ball as the closer. And we've seen it with former starters. I mean, I could think of a couple notable ones. I remember like Kerry Wood was closing games. Who was the Atlanta closer forever? Ah, man, it's going to drive me nuts. But, I mean, we've seen the transition. So the thing is, though, with Kimbrel out there, if you can get it done, I keep going back to the years, but I just, man, that I look at that curveball and that fastball combination, and I just feel like you're already, if you bring him in and guys get healthy towards the end of the year, I just feel like you're the favorite in the entire National League to represent the National League in the World Series if you bring a guy like that in. I do. But I knew something was up once the conversations came up about the Brewers in talks with him or talking with him, whatever the hell we're allowed to say about it.
Right, right.
Because I was like, are you strengthening a strength? You know, with Hader, Knebel, and Jeffers already in the bullpen, that's when I was like, something has to be up because we're hearing about how Knebel hasn't thrown in a couple weeks. And then, you know, the Jeffers injury that they're saying isn't serious, because that's what they were saying at first, is it was just soreness, right? He was just sore, taking a few days off. I started thinking, okay, is something up? Or are you just really just gunning for this World Series this year, going all in and putting all your chips on the table?
You needed a catcher. You went out and got Grandal. You needed a second baseman. You got Mike Moustakas to play there. You need a reliever. Go out and get him. Again, it takes two to tango, but I am hoping upon hope that at least the Brewers are like doing everything they can to make that happen. Rob's on the south side, 799-1250. What's up, Rob?
Good morning, guys. I love the idea of Kimbrel, but boy, they've really spent a lot of money in the offseason. I don't know if they can. Is he a Boris client?
I don't know that.
That's a big deal. If he is, forget it.
Well, Boris and Mark have a good relationship.
Okay. Well, you know, like maybe even a 2-year. Kimbrel is, I think he's 30.
Yeah, 30 years old. Know? Yep.
All right. He's worth a 2-year deal. Mm-hmm. If you can't, I mean, you're not going to give him 7. You never give a reliever 7. But Barnes is intriguing because he throws strike 1. The thing about Barnes is he was never really put in close situations. He usually mopped up on either side of the score, whether we were up 5 or down 5. But the problem with Guerra is ball 1, ball 2. And when you got guys at the end of games, I mean, early in the season it's not as critical, but you got to have guys that can throw 6. That was the key to our bullpen all last year, is they were able to get ahead on counts. If you can't trust a guy to throw strike 1, mm-hmm. forget it. You can't use him at the end.
I completely agree. That's a great point right there.
Zach tweets in and says, remember that time when Corey Knebel was hurt for the first month and a half of the season and we still won the NL Central? Well, Zach, I happen to remember that for sure. Now, what happened then last year was the other guys stepped up. So if you're going to get a
I brought that up.
0.75 ERA out of Matt Albers again, all right, then there's nothing to worry about. But if you're not confident in Matt Albers or Jacob Barnes, then the conversation is worth having. Always worth having conversations with Marcus Johnson. His jersey to be retired this weekend. We caught up with him. You'll have that, including his thoughts on the current Bucks team and what exactly happened there, the rift between him and the Bucks under the old ownership. It's Chuck and Winkler. We're served up by Perkins, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler, Chuck Freeman. And I had the chance to catch up with Marcus Johnson. The jersey retirement is coming up on Sunday. And first and foremost, halftime of the Cavs game was announced a couple of months ago. First and foremost, I mean, we've all thought this should have happened for a long time. And a tremendous congratulations to Marcus Johnson for the honor.
Hey, man, thanks a lot. I appreciate that, and it is indeed a tremendous honor. I actually found out a while back toward the latter part of last season, Peter Fagan and I were talking about my contract status, and my contract was up, and did I want to re-up for another go-round, and they wanted me to come back and like the work that we had done the past 3 years. And so he said, now let me cut to the chase. You know, you'll be the first jersey to go up in five serve form, but we're going to retire number 8. And so, yeah, you know, it was an emotional moment when he said that. I mean, it's something that I Jim Paschke talked to me a lot about. You know, you'll be the first one to go up in five serve. And other people had mentioned that, but until it really happens, like you mentioned, you don't really grasp the enormity of what that means. And So my initial reaction was, what about Matthew Dellavedova? I wonder what's going to happen with him in number eight. And once he got traded in December, I felt like the coast was clear. But Deli sent me a nice DM on Twitter and then congratulating me and all that good stuff. And I told him that I respected the way that he wore the jersey and he wore it well. And so it's all good, man. I'm just really honored to have. It's the greatest honor that a team can do for a player is to not allow anyone else to wear that number ever. And so I'm honored. I'm really honored.
Marcus, so many years have passed. Honestly, did you ever think this day would come, this time would come? Because, I mean, you're a five-time All-Star. I mean, you put up some numbers here. And, you know, many of us guys who are in the 40s and 50s grew up on one of those great Bucks teams that I mention all the time from the late 70s and early 80s. But did you think, though, that this was ever going to come because there's so many years that passed?
Well, you know, I didn't give it much thought in terms of it ever happening. I just assumed that it probably would never happen up until I accepted the job as the color analyst. And once I got back here and really got my finger on the pulse of the fans here and how they felt about those teams in the 80s, all the love and adoration that I got from guys like yourself that grew up on those teams in the 80s. And that's when I realized just how special and unique this Milwaukee kind of fan base is. It's kind of like Shangri-La. It's a really frigid, cold version of Shangri-La, but like a Shangri-La, so its own. It's, you know, it's kind of got its own kind of deal, its own kind of ecosystem going on sports-wise. And I think the fans just really appreciated, even though we fell short in those years, and that was always my thing. It's like we never won a championship, never got to the NBA Finals, but the fans just revered those years and the players, Junior Bridgman and Bob Lanier and Brian Winters and Quinn Buckner and myself and Sidney Moncrief. I mean, you know, there was just such a connection. And so once I got back here, that's when the thought started becoming more prevalent in my mind that the possibility of number eight going up was probably as good as it ever was going to be.
You know, when I see this team play, I do think back to those teams. Yeah, and you didn't win a championship, but there were times you won 60 games and the Celtics would win 62 and you'd lose out on home court advantage, or the Sixers would win 62. You won Central Division titles, man. There were so many years where you guys had the opportunity, but, you know, there was always that one team that was better. It was always Philly or Boston, or when you guys were in the Western Conference, it was Seattle.
In Western Conference, we won a Midwest Division championship and lost to the Sonics in seven games. It was great. Dennis Johnson, Gus Williams, Jack Sigma, Johnny Johnson out of Mesmer High School. Those great, great teams. And then, as you mentioned, it was always either Boston or Philly, and that was something that really kind of stuck in my craw for a long time, not being able to get at least to an NBA Finals. But then, you know, just started looking back at some of the rosters that were the guys on the rosters back in those days. And, you know, when you got Mikael and Parrish and Bird and Dennis Johnson in Boston, and you got Doc and Moses Malone, once they made the trade for him, that kind of was a done deal. But Maurice Cheeks, a recent Hall of Famer, Andrew Toney, the Boston Strangler, Bobby Jones, one of the greatest defenders in the history of this game, who belongs in the Hall of Fame because of his defense. I had to go against the Sixers and guard Dr. J at one end and then try and score on Bobby Jones at the other end, and still would average 28 points a game in a seven-game series. So, you know, it was just a unique experience. And, yes, it was disappointing, but I think, again, what the fans respect, and I think as players, what we have come to accept is that, hey, we gave it our best shot and we just got beat by teams that were better than us. And in sports, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, because that's kind of how it happens. If you don't have the greatest talent out there, it's tough to win a seven-game series, and we found that out too many times to mention.
Jeez, all those guys you just mentioned, Andrew Toney, Dr. J, even Moses who played here, I still hate those guys. I hated them then, and I hate them now.
Oh, man, well, you know, I don't go to those. And Doc was always just a hero of mine coming up. And Maurice Cheeks is one of the class guys. I saw him once he was inducted into the Hall of Fame last year. And I was like, how did you get in? You know, and he just started laughing. Mm-hmm. But he told me how emotional it was. And then, so, yeah, I mean, you know, I respect them so much. The Boston Celtic guys, I respect all of them just as great competitors. And you look back on it, I watch some of those games on NBA Classic TV. And, you know, they were just knocked down, drag out basketball, and again, it was always just a little bit of edge and talent that was our undoing. But we gave it our best shot.
Marcus, you got a five-time All-Star. You were one of the best players in the NBA during your time. Did the back injury keep you out of the Hall of Fame? You think if you didn't have that, you would have got into the Hall of Fame to take it one step further other than the jersey being retired?
Well, so let's look at it. So here's the deal. My second year in the league, I averaged almost 26 points a game, 8 rebounds, shot 55% from the field. Don Nelson, one of the greatest coaches in the history of the NBA, to never win a championship, probably the greatest coach to never win, but just a great coach. He called me into his office before my third season and said, how much do you think you can average this next season? I was like, well, I can average between 28 and 30. I averaged 26 last year. I'm 23 years old, 55% from the field, and I've been working hard on my game this summer, and I can average 28 to 30. So I believe you can average 30, but look, this is what I want you to do. I need you to average 20 to 21 points a game, about 7 rebounds a game, play tough defense, and be more of a facilitator, distribute the basketball. We've got Junior, we've got Sidney, we've got Brian Winters, we've got Bob Amir, who was coming in around midseason, but we're going to upgrade that center position. And so you look at my numbers from that second year on, I averaged 21, no more than 21.7, I think. So my point is that it probably cost me about, maybe 5,000 or 6,000 points over 10 years or so. If you add that on to the almost 14,000 that I have now, that would put me close to 20,000, and that's more kind of automatic Hall of Famer numbers. So, it's funny. I was the team guy, bought into the team concept, and they would never ask me to do, but it may wind up in the end costing me an opportunity to get into the Hall of Fame. But that's okay. Things work out how they're supposed to work out. One of those guys who's borderline, and most of the analysts who look at that kind of stuff say that I do deserve to be in. Coupled with the neck injury, I hurt my neck in my 10th year, and that cut my career short probably 3 to 5 years, 3 to 5 really good years at 30 years old. So, but that's the way things happen. Things happen how they're supposed to, and I have no regrets.
Talking with Marcus Johnson, who will have his jersey number 8 retired with the Bucks March 24th in a game against the Cavs, the 5-time All-Star, 4 times. With your Milwaukee Bucks. There was a period there where you were with the Bucks, and then that long period where, the organization was not really welcoming with you and retiring your jersey and really honoring what you did here. When you came back, obviously this team is easy to be a rooting for and to be a part of, and you've got that, upfront and close experience. How much do you feel like you are a part of this team, this organization that is charging to the finals, and how long did it take for maybe any feelings of ill will to go away?
Well, it wasn't so much ill will. I never got that. I mean, I was talking with one of our executive secretaries through email a couple of days ago, Rita Huber, and she was talking about how she was the one that typed up my contract extension back in 1981. But I thanked her because she was the one that reached out to me for years. Every year, she'd want me to come out for different Buck activities, play in the golf tournament, come out for this, come out for that. And I was always like, nah, I'm busy doing this. It was from my end that, I didn't reciprocate the way the Bucks were reaching out to me. And it was just, it's bitterness, the way the kind of things ended. I would have loved to have ended, on a retirement tour like some of the greats of Donna, or make the All-Star team 3 or 4 more times and get the 20,000 points and all that stuff. So to have the career end prematurely the way it did, and even though it ended prematurely, it was Don Nelson at Golden State. I'd been through some really, really tough situations in my life, and it was Don Nelson who took me into the Golden State Warriors and helped me get in great shape. And we had some injuries to big men, Manute Bol and Alton Lister, and so he had to let me go that year after I'd been out for 2.5 years at 33 years old. But he hooked up a job for me over in Italy through Warren Legere, this great agent. So I spent my last year in Italy kind of getting some closure. But I was done. I was done playing. So the point is that, once I got back here, like over 3 years ago, and the fans and the organization and just the love and acceptance and embracing that was going on both directions, all that other stuff was in the past, and I think we'd all kind of evolved to a point where, hey, it's a brand new day, brand new arena, brand new ownership group, and let's make the best of it. So that's kind of how it played out. But I don't blame the organization. I mean, it was more, me kind of feeling like, just bitter for a number of years about not going out on top and being having the kind of exit from the NBA that I saw a lot of my peers kind of have. And so there's some of that involved in that, too.
Not a lot of people were happy when they traded for you. Yeah, Terry Cummings, they got back and they returned from the Clippers. Nice player. Got a few nice players, but you guys were still in your run. And I thought there was some business left unfinished there, and then they trade you. Why did they trade you, Marcus? Did you ever get down to the bottom of that?
Yeah, but you know, I was here 7 years, and it's just, you know, it's a long time to hear one voice and Don Nelson, and you know, I'm from Los Angeles, and I remember Nelly telling me that you know, we're going to trade you, we're going to send you back home, but it's not the Lakers, it's the Clippers, and every organization is not like the Milwaukee Bucks, and this Clipper organization is a whole different type of an organization, so don't expect it to be like here. But look, you know, you got an opportunity. You think about Terry Cummings. I was about 27, 28 at the time, and Terry Cummings was about 3 or 4 years younger. He's averaging 23, 24, great rebounder. Terry Cummings was a great player. And so I think it was an opportunity for the Bucks to get a little bit younger, get a little bit bigger on that front line, the 6'8", 6'9", player, to my 6'6". And so I think that had a lot more to do with it than anything, just the fact that I'd been here 7 years. We've kind of hit that wall, couldn't get past Celtics, Sixers. So I thought Nelly and the organization, Terry Cummings, would make the Bucks a better basketball team at that point. It didn't work out that way. And you know, I talk with Sidney Mikic all the time about that. He was like, man, I missed the way we used to play together compared to how me and Terry Cummings, still a great player, but I think Terry loved to shoot the ball just a little too much for Sid's liking.
Oh, he sure did. I hated him, man. Terry, you talk about James Harden being a ball hog. Terry Cummings, God, the ball never got out of his hands.
Yeah, TC loved to do his thing. So yes, and that's the thing. That was the beauty of our team. You know, I went from 26 to 21, but it was the way we played. We played together with the togetherness and the cohesion. That was just a beautiful thing to be a part of, and I think they thought Terry Cummings might fit in even just as well. But chemistry is something that it's a fickle thing. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
You've got a team now, Marcus, that is maybe the best Bucks team they've had since your teams back in the 80s, and you look at the road ahead for them and the expectations on them. Could this be the team that gets Milwaukee back to the finals? Are they that good? Can they hold up in these 7-game series that they're going to be facing in April?
It's obviously going to be really, really tough. But man, this coaching staff that we have right now, I've been around a lot of coaching staffs, a lot of practices, watch teams be put together. Haven't seen anything like this ever. I mean, this is one of the elite coaching staffs that I've ever seen in my life, and I'm talking about Krzyzewski and Mike Montgomery at Stanford and, you know, John Wooden at UCLA. This team, the ability of this staff to push the right buttons, to know how to get these guys motivated, to keep practices uber competitive on a daily basis. I mean, the way they got these guys' mindset, and the beautiful thing is that at the start of the season, Connaughton was playing a lot, David Chisel was playing a lot, Sterling Brown was sitting. But Sterling Brown was rooting and cheering for them like they were his brothers, and then all of a sudden, it flip flops, and now you watch Connaughton and DiVincenzo cheer for Sterling Brown. So you don't get that backbiting and that jealousy and all that kind of stuff that kind of can hurt a team. And that's the most remarkable thing that I think they've done, is keep everybody together and everybody kind of pulling for one another.
That's Marcus Johnson. Obviously, you can hear him on Fox Sports Wisconsin. His jersey number 8 will be retired this weekend halftime as the Bucks take on the Cavs. It's Chuck and Winkler. We'll cover what we did not cover today, including: could a former Packer be on his way back to Green Bay? We'll have that next. Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. Monday morning, we'll come back, recap the first 4 days of the tournament. Maybe 2 Wisconsin games. We'll see.
What was your favorite moment of the tournament? 4-1-4.
Sam Schmitz taking over the Ryan Horvath role today as Horvath takes over the Chuck role. What do we miss today, Sam?
All right, so as you guys know, Giannis participated with Kobe Bryant this offseason and worked with him. Can you hear me?
No, you're good. Just right. Talk into it.
As you guys know, Giannis worked with Kobe Bryant this offseason. As it reported on Bleacher Report, Giannis took notes for an hour this offseason during workouts with Kobe on matchups that gave him problems in the past. Now, if you could pair Giannis with any current or past NBA player to work with in the offseason, who would it be?
I like that question. Should we save it? Steal it from Sam?
Yeah, can you email me that question, and we'll do a topic on it next week? I would like to see the Bucks go back in time and take Joel Embiid instead of Jabari.
Well, yeah, I think we all would. If Giannis can work with any player.
The difference between me and everyone else is I'm admitting that now, and everyone else was able to say that for the last 4 years.
I want MJ and Giannis to work out together. I mean, not that MJ could really teach him anything because he's the two opposite games. He could teach him the fadeaway jumper, maybe. I just like that they have like the same mentality. Like they don't want to buddy-buddy with you. They want to kill you. That's why I like Giannis. He's my favorite player.
I'd like to see him work with the Dream, Hakeem Olajuwon.
Learn the shake?
Because, I mean, we all know when Giannis drives, it's going to be, I'm going to put my shoulder into your chest with all my strength, and I'm going to go to the rim. But, you know, it'd be nice to have a little bit of finesse moves in there in his game, his repertoire when he posts up.
I'll tell you who I don't want him to work with is Kevin Garnett.
How come?
Because he broke Thon Maker.
Yeah, that's true.
What else we miss, Sam?
All right, so Randall Cobb penned a heartfelt goodbye message on Instagram to Packers fans. In the post, he mentioned a bunch of moments in his Packers, all the way from his rookie debut to the fourth down touchdown at Soldier Field.
Yeah.
Basically saying it was an honor to wear the G and represent you all. He also said, this was inevitable, but all things must come to an end. I guess, what is your favorite Randall Cobb memory?
Yeah,
there you go, Sam.
Yeah. Now you have just graduated. You can now officially work at the Fan.
Yep.
What is your favorite memory?
Yes.
Nice.
There you go. You are now a member of the fraternity.
Yeah, we are now a cut above. Now What's wrong? He's shaking his head.
I mean,
my favorite Randall Cobb moment was the fourth down touchdown. I was at that game. I was an intern. I got to cover that game. Got a phone call. They're like, you want to go to Soldier Field and cover this game? And I'm like, hell yeah. And I was a nervous wreck because I'm in the press box and I'm the biggest Packers fan, you know, and I'm like, the freaking season's over. The Bears are going to win the North. And then that happened. And I did the thing like that you're not supposed to do in the press box. I looked around because I was like, you know, a kid.
Morgan Burnett's going to get released by the Steelers. Anybody want Morgan Burnett back?
I do because I have his jersey, and it's just sitting in my closet collecting dust along with my Jordy Nelson jersey, so I'll take Morgan Burnett back. Why not?
Do you have a Tom Crabtree jersey? Because we do at our house.
I turned my Morgan Burnett jersey into a Gary Ellerson, though, because they both wore 42, so I just put Ellerson over the name.
So you have the one Gary Ellerson jersey.
I have it, yep.
In existence.
You could borrow it this weekend.
They'll be live at Element today, 2 to 6. Chuck and Winkler on the Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.